Chapter 10. Tweeny's house, when they arrived, showed only a faint blue haze in the region of the top floor. "He's in the kitchen," Marianne said, pushing open the car door. The others followed, and in a moment they were tramping up the long flight of stairs. There was no immediate response to Marianne's tap. Finally, she opened the door and entered. Down the hallway glowed a pittance of light. The sounds of movement were audible. Marianne hurried in that direction and appeared breathlessly in Tweeny's high-ceilinged kitchen. Tweeny, still wearing his pink shirt and hand-painted tie, was sitting at the table eating a sardine sandwich and drinking a bottle of Rheingold beer. In front of him, spread out among the litter of food, was a smeared copy of Esquire, which he was reading. "We came," Marianne said, her heart aching to see him there, big and sturdy, his sleeves rolled up, his arms thick and heavy and powerful. "We brought what's-his-name along." Nitz materialized in the doorway. "Get ready to be sewed up," he announced, and then vanished back into the hall. The others, Beth and Lemming and Coombs, followed him into the disorderly living room, leaving Marianne and Tweeny alone. "He's no good," Marianne said loyally. "All he does is talk." A placid superiority spread across the man's features. He shrugged and resumed his reading.
"Help yourself. You know where the refrigerator is."
"I'm not hungry," Marianne said. "Tweeny..." Beaming, Chad Lemming entered the kitchen, carrying his guitar.
"Mr. Tweeny, I've wanted to meet you for a long time. I've heard a lot about your style."
Untouched by the young man's flattery, Tweeny looked slowly up.
"You're Chad Lemming?"
Self-consciously, Lemming fingered his guitar. "I do a sort of political monologue." Tweeny studied him. Lemming, still grinning with embarrassment, started to speak and then changed his mind. A few plaintive squawks drifted from his guitar as if it were getting away from him.
"Go ahead," Tweeny said.
"Sir?" Tweeny inclined his head toward the guitar.
"Go on. I'm listening."
Completely ill at ease, Chad Lemming began to tell the stories and sing the ballads he had produced at the Coombs' apartment. "Well," he croaked half-heartedly, "I suppose you read in the newspapers the other day about President Eisenhower going to cut taxes. That caused me to do some thinking." Stammering, his voice faint, he began to sing. Tweeny, after watching a moment, imperceptibly returned to his magazine. There was no particular instant when he did so. The change was so gradual that Marianne could not follow it. Suddenly, there was Tweeny eating his sardine sandwich and studying an article on Big League Baseball. The others, filling up the doorway, listened and peeped into the kitchen. Lemming, with a shudder of abandon, knowing that he had failed, did a final raucous number about a library that either burned all its books or never had any books. Marianne couldn't tell. She wished he would stop. She wished he would go. He was making a fool of himself, and it goaded her to a fever pitch. By the time he had finished, she wanted to scream aloud. The silence that followed Lemming's performance was total. In the sink, the monotonous dripping of a leaky faucet increased the sense of futility that hung over the room. Finally, with a grunt, Coombs elbowed his way in, swinging his flash camera.
"What's that?" Tweeny asked, taking an interest.
"I want to get some pictures."
"Of what?" Tweeny's voice took on a formal edge. "Of myself and Mr. Lemming?"
"That's correct," Coombs said. "Chad, get over beside him. Tweeny, or whatever your name is, get up so you're both in the picture."
"I'm sorry, but I can't oblige," Tweeny said. "My agent won't permit me to pose for publicity shots without his consent."
"What the hell agent is that?" Nitz demanded. There was an uncomfortable pause while Tweeny went on with his meal and Chad Lemming stood unhappily beside the table. "Forget it," Beth said to her husband. "Do as Mr. Tweeny says." Coombs, staring down at Tweeny, suddenly complied. He flipped the lens cover over his camera, turned his back, and walked off. "The hell with it," he said, and mumbled a few words that nobody caught. Hoisting up his guitar, Lemming departed from the room. Presently they heard the mournful noises from a long way off. He was curled up in the living room, playing to himself.
"Tweeny," Marianne said, exasperated, "you ought to be ashamed of yourself."
Tweeny raised an eyebrow, shrugged, and finished the remains of his sandwich. Brushing crumbs from his trousers, he arose and went over to the sink to rinse his hands.
"What would you people care to drink? Beer? Scotch?"
They accepted scotch, and with their drinks joined Lemming in the living room. The young man didn't look up. Absorbed in his playing, he continued to crouch over his guitar.
You play that pretty good, Nitz said sympathetically. Lemming muttered a grateful thanks.
Maybe you ought to concentrate on that, Beth said, having ingested her cue from Tweeny. Maybe just the guitar would be better.
I like it a lot better, Marianne said. I can't see that talking.
In a quandary, Lemming protested, but that's the whole point.
Let it go, Beth said.
Stalking around the untidy living room, she came upon the piano. No larger than a spinet, the piano was lost under heaps of magazines and clothing.
Do you play? She asked Tweeny.
No. Sometimes Paul accompanies me. Practice.
Not very often, Nitz said, wiping dust from the keyboard with his handkerchief. He struck a chord, expertly diminished it, and then lost interest.
You're going to have trouble getting this out of here, he remarked.
Instantly, Marianne said, Tweeny isn't going anywhere.
We got it up with ropes, Tweeny said, and we can get it down the same way, through the kitchen window if we have to.
Where are you going? Marianne demanded, panic-stricken.
Nowhere, Tweeny answered.
Tell her, Nitz said.
There's nothing to tell. It's just an idea.
Tweeny's planning his big time, Nitz said to the petrified girl. He's moving along to L.A. Got an offer from Jaime Feld, the character who handles those jump concerts. Trial run at a bunch of test spots on Jaime's circuit.
The word trial never came up, Tweeny corrected.
Seating herself at the piano, Beth started tapping out the G minor scale. A little island of sound came into being around her. Tweeny, she said with a toss of her hair, I used to write songs. Did you know that?
No, Tweeny said.
She brought one along, Coombs said sourly. She's going to trot it out and ask you to sing it.
At this, Tweeny puffed up until he was even larger than usual. A bluish, steely nimbus shone out, a massive conceit.
Well, he said. I'm always interested in new material.
Nitz belched. As the sheet music was brought out of Beth's giant bag, Marianne said to Nitz, You should have told me.
I waited.
What for? She couldn't understand. Until he was here, so he could answer. But, she said helplessly, he didn't answer. She felt swamped by what was happening. Her reality was drifting, and she was unable to stop it.
He didn't say anything.
That's what I mean, Nitz said. His voice sank down as Beth began to play.
Tweeny, standing behind her, leaned forward to catch the words. He had already entered a stage of rigid concentration. To him, music was a serious matter. Whatever trifle Beth had concocted was going to receive his full attention. There was an innate grace that Marianne could not forget or ignore. Belief in what he was doing added measure to the man's style.
This song, Tweeny intoned, is called Where We Sat Down, and tells the story of a young woman walking through the countryside in autumn, remembering and visiting the places where she and her lover, now dead, killed in foreign lands, had been together. It is a simple song.
And taking a deep, meaningful breath, he sang the simple song.
He doesn't usually do that, Nitz murmured as the song came to a finish. Beth began rippling out arpeggios, and Tweeny meditated over the enigma of existence. It's hard to get him to do stuff on sight. He likes to give it the once over.
Beth was saying to the man standing beside her, You felt it, didn't you? Her playing took on volume and emotion. You felt what I meant in that.
Yes, Tweeny agreed,
eyes half shut, swaying with the music. And you brought it over. You realized it.
It was a beautiful song, Tweeny said in a trance.
Yes, Beth murmured. It takes on a beauty, an almost terrifying beauty.
White Christmas, Nitz said, that's the end of you. You're finished.
For the briefest interval, Tweeny wrestled with his composure. Then passion overcame him, and he turned from the piano.
Paul, he said, a casual cruelty can do great harm.
Only to a sensitive soul, Nitz reminded him.
This is my house. You're a guest in my house at my invitation.
Only the top floor? Nitz was pale and tense. He was no longer joking. The strained silence grew until Marianne at last went over to Tweeny and said, We all should go.
No, Tweeny answered, his geniality returning.
Paul, Marianne said to Nitz, let's get out of here.
Whatever you want, Nitz said. At the piano, Beth played a series of runs. "Don't you want to wait for us? We'll give you a ride back."
"I meant," Marianne said to her, realizing that it was hopeless, "if we all left, all five of us together."
"That would be nice," Beth agreed.
"Gosh, I can't imagine anything nicer."
She made no move to get up, and her playing continued. In the corner, his legs drawn under him, Chad Lemming sorrowfully picked at his guitar, ignored by the rest of the group. His sounds, drowned out by the overpowering piano, dissolved and were lost.
"You won't get her to go," Danny Coombs said to Marianne in a fit of excitement. "She's got herself planted. She's set."
"Shut up, Danny," Beth said good-naturedly, beginning a progression that formed into a foray ballade.
"Listen to this," she said to Tweeny. "Ever heard it? It's one of my favorites."
"I've never heard it," Tweeny said. "Is it one of yours?"
Beth created a great shower of musical sparks, a Chopin prelude followed at once by the opening of the Liszt B-flat sonata. Tweeny, caught in the wind blazing around him, stood fast and survived, even managing to smile as the piece ended.
"I love good music," he declared, and Marianne, embarrassed, looked away. "I wish I had more time for it."
"Do you know Schubert's Erlkönig?" Beth asked, playing furiously. "How wonderfully you could render it."
Lifting his camera, Coombs snapped a shot of the two of them at the piano. Tweeny seemed not even to notice. He continued breathing in the music, eyes shut now, hands clasped together before him. Laughing, Coombs popped the exhausted bulb onto the floor and fitted in a fresh one from the leather pouch at his waist.
"Jesus," he said to Nitz, "he's completely left us."
"He does that," Nitz said, standing by Marianne, his hand on her shoulder. The friendly pressure made her feel a little better, but not much. "I'm afraid that's his way." Suddenly, Beth leaped from the piano. In ecstasy, she seized Lemming by the hand and dragged him to his feet.
"You too," she cried in his astonished ear. "All of us, join in."
Gratified to find himself noticed, Lemming began playing wildly. Beth hurried back to the piano and struck up the opening chords of a Chopin Polonaise. Lemming, overpowered, danced around the room. Throwing his guitar onto the couch, he jumped high in the air, whacked the ceiling with the palms of his hands, descended, caught hold of Marianne, and spun her about. At the piano, rocking back and forth, Tweeny roared out the lyrics,
"Till the end of time."
Miserable and ashamed, Marianne struggled out of Lemming's embrace. She reached the safety of the corner and again stood beside Paul Nitz, collecting herself and smoothing down her coat.
"They're nuts," Nitz said. "They're hopped in another dimension."
Giggling, Coombs crept past them with his camera and stole a covert shot of Beth's emotion-contorted face. The dead bulb disappeared under Tweeny's foot. Coombs crept on, past the Negro, over to the spot where Lemming was sprinting through his dance. Again, a flash of light blinded them all. When Marianne could see again, she found Coombs climbing up onto the piano to photograph the group from above.
"God," she said, shivering, "there's something wrong with him."
Nitz, withdrawn and bitter, said, "This is bad stuff, Mary. I should take you home. You don't deserve it."
"No," she said, "I'm not going."
"Why not? What do you want here?" His gaunt frame trembled. Nauseated, he bent his head. "Him? Still?"
"It's not his fault."
"You never give up, do you?" Nitz's voice cracked apart, and he swallowed creakily. "I can't stand any more of this jumping. I'm leaving."
"Don't," Marianne said quickly. "Please, Paul, don't leave."
"Christ," Nitz implored. "I'm sick." He handed her his glass, and crouching over, hobbled out of the room and down the hall. Coombs, like some bony spider, gleefully took a picture of him as he passed.
"Look at me," Lemming shouted, waving his arms and panting for breath. "What am I? Tell me what I am."
Beth began to play Poor Butterfly.
"No," Lemming shrieked. "You're wrong."
He threw himself onto the floor and rolled under the piano. Only his twitching legs were visible.
"What am I now?"
Scuttling from the corner, Coombs squatted down and took a photograph of him. Eyes distorted, Coombs popped dead bulbs from his camera and fumbled new ones from his pouch. His skin had turned from white to a mottled red. His hair, disarranged and shiny, oozed down his temples. Feeling ill herself, Marianne retreated into the kitchen, her hands over her ears, trying to shut out the noise. But it forced itself through the walls and floor. Transmitted as vibration, it hammered around her. She could hear Nitz being sick in the bathroom. a tearing sound, as if his body were being dragged apart. Poor Nitz, she thought. Uncovering her ears, she stood listening to his agony and wondering what she could do. Nothing, apparently. And he was suffering for her, too. Behind her, in the living room, the delirium went on. Lemming appeared in the doorway, his face flooded with joy, held out his arms to her, and then vanished. The bull rumble of Carlton Tweeny never abated, rising and falling, but contained within the frenzy of the little old piano. To her, the sound of the piano was a friendly and familiar noise gone wrong. Sometimes, sitting alone in the apartment, waiting for Tweeny to appear, he seldom did, she had pecked out a few weak themes, jukebox melodies from her meager years. Now, the din of the piano was terrific. Played by professionals, the racket grew in volume until the cups and plates in the cupboard above her vibrated. At the moment, they were playing John Henry. Tweeny was going into a routine. He stood beating his hands on the piano, eyes shut, head thrown back, body agitated with ecstasy. Coombs, sneaking around, took a picture of him, and then one of Lemming, who was huddled over Beth, reaching past her to join with her on the keys of the piano. Four hands pounding. The enormous passion shook the house. Up! Coombs's voice sounded in her ear. Startled, Marianne opened her eyes to find him leering at her from the doorway. He was trying to take her picture. She grabbed a plate from the drain board and hurled it at him. The plate burst against the wall above his head. He blinked and withdrew. Shaking, she buried her face in her hands and took a labored breath. Now she wished she had gone. She shouldn't have stayed. In the living room, Lemming had swept Beth up from the piano. The two of them were leaping about the room, chanting meaninglessly, incoherent in their abandon. For Tweeny, it was still John Henry. The piano had ceased, but he roared on. Around and around went the dancing couple. Halting, Beth tore off her shoes, kicked them out of the way, and hurried on. Marianne closed her eyes and leaned wearily against the sink. She was there, rubbing her eyes and trying to laugh, when she heard the crash in the bathroom. Fully awake, she jumped randomly forward and stood in the center of the kitchen, listening, trying to hear above the din. There was no further sound. The bathroom at the end of the hall was silent. With a gasp of intuition, she ran to the closed door, seized the knob, and rattled it. The bathroom door was locked. "Paul!" she called. There was no response. She kicked at the door with her toe. The sound echoed back to her, but still there was nothing from inside. Letting go of the knob, she turned and raced up the hallway to the living room. "Tweeny, for God's sake!" she grated, catching hold of him as he stood leaning happily on the piano. No one paid any attention. Coombs was reloading his camera, his face blank with excitement. Lemming and Beth had whirled their way over to the corner, and Lemming was now pushing her away and grabbing up his guitar. Beating on Tweeny's unresponsive shoulder, Marianne screamed, "Something's happened to Paul Nitz! He's killed himself!" Tweeny stirred a little under the pressure of her fists. She caught hold of his shirt and tugged at him. "Tweeny!" she wailed. "Help me!" Gradually, with massive reluctance, Tweeny awoke from his trance. "What?" he mumbled, blinking and focusing. "Where? The bathroom?" Then she was scampering back down the hall. Behind her, Tweeny strode along, collecting his wits. The door was still locked. She stepped aside as Tweeny reached for the knob, turned it, and then hammered. "Come on, Nitz," he bellowed, his cheek against the wood. There was no answer.
"He's dead," Marianne said.
"Christ," Tweeny muttered, glancing around him. He made his way to the kitchen and returned with a key. The lock responded and the door fell open. Stretched out on the bathroom floor lay Paul Nitz, but he was not dead. He had passed out and hit his head on the side of the toilet. There he lay, his eyes closed, arms outstretched, a puddle of vomit around him. He had been sitting on the rim of the bathtub, being sick into the toilet. The white porcelain was still streaked where he had clung to it. Bending down, Tweeny lifted the man and inspected the welt on his forehead. A drizzle of saliva and stomach juices leaked down Nitz's chin. He stirred and groaned. "Go in the living room," Tweeny instructed, "and phone a doctor."
"Yes," Marianne said, and hurried down the hall. At the entrance to the living room, she halted. There was the telephone resting on the small wooden table by the chair, but she could not go in. In the rapture of the dance, Beth had given herself completely. She had pulled off her clothes, flung them in a heap on the floor, and gone on to greater heights without them. Naked, perspiring, she was lunging about the room,
large and pale and gleaming, her breasts wiggling mightily, her bulging hips palpitating with delight. Lemming sat curled up on the carpet, his guitar in his lap, eyes glued happily on the instrument, strumming a weird cacophony that slithered and shimmered in time to the woman's orgy. Coombs, still giggling, crept after the fluttering body of his wife, photographing her again and again, dead flash bulbs flying from his camera. None of the three noticed Marianne. Each was involved in his own world. She remained in the doorway, unable to enter, unable to back out, until, finally, Tweeny appeared beside her to find out what was wrong.
"Christ!" Tweeny said.
He stood behind the girl, moved by what he saw, gazing until Coombs became aware of him and stopped his wary pursuit of his wife's hams. An ugly discoloration fled up into Coombs's cheeks. He squinted, struggled to his feet, advanced a few uneven steps toward Tweeny, and said in a thick, hoarse voice,
"You nigger, what are you doing? You nigger, get out of here!"
Tweeny said nothing. The sound of Lemming's guitar dimmed into stillness. Shaking his head, Lemming turned, pulled his horn-rimmed glasses from his pocket, put them on, and peered around him. Beth, unwinding like a tardy mechanical device, came slowly to rest, mouth open, body shaking with fatigue and cold.
"Nigger!"
Coombs squealed, trying to scuttle between Tweeny and the sweating nakedness of his wife. "Get out! Get out or I'll kill you!" All of the man's hatreds rose to the surface. He tottered toward Tweeny, peering blindly, circling in a crippled, jerky step that first took him closer and then farther away from the Negro.
"This is my house," Tweeny murmured.
His confidence began to seep back into him. Pulling himself up, he said almost sternly,
"Don't talk to me like that in my house. I do what I want in my house."
From the stairs outside came a dull drumming. At the same time, the whir of sirens lapsed into a blur in the street below. Before any of them could move, there was a loud banging on the door of the apartment. Marianne whirled to race down the hallway to the door. She twisted the lock back. The door was thrust in her face, and she was thrown to one side. Three policemen pushed inside and thundered down the hall toward the living room, leaving her alone. Without hesitation, she plunged out into the darkness of the porch and down the stairs. Gripping the invisible railing, she descended to the ground, and half-falling, half-rolling, shoved her way into the moist wall of shrubs that grew along the path. Upstairs, in the darkness, sounded the rattle of voices. More police appeared, flashing lights and muttering commands. In a few minutes, astonishingly few, the first group plodded drearily down the flight of steps, Tweeny and Beth Coombs. After them came Danny Coombs and the shivering individual that was Chad Lemming. The four of them were herded into a patrol car. The car came to life and shot away. Porch lights winked on here and there as neighbors, aroused from sleep, appeared. "That's them?" one of the policemen was asking. From his patrol car came the enlarged mutter of his radio. He stalked over to it, slid in behind the wheel, and addressed the police operator at the station. They were leaving. One by one, the police assembled, spoke a few words to each other, and climbed back into their cars. In a doorway on the bottom floor of the building stood a dignified Negro man. He watched with righteous solemnity as the police departed. One of them halted long enough to speak to him. The Negro nodded in satisfaction and closed his door. After a long wait, Marianne stirred. She was shivering with cold. Damp night mist clung to her hair, and bits of gravel cut into the palms of her hands as she crawled forward and out of the shrubbery. Her coat was torn, and fragments of leaves were embedded in her hair. Shuddering, she stood up, hesitated, and then began ascending the stairs to the third floor. The living room was a shambles. The lights, still on, blazed impotently. From the open door, a chill gust of wind billowed in. Marianne closed the door, locked it, and passed on inside. Beth's clothing lay where she had shed it. She had been hustled down the stairs in Tweeny's overcoat. There in the corner was Coombs's camera, a dead flashbulb still in the holder. The floor was strewn with broken bulbs. Drops of blood glinted where Beth's naked feet had dripped, cut by the particles of glass. Automatically, Marianne picked up Lemming's guitar and placed it upright in the corner. Then she went to the bathroom and looked timidly in. Paul Nitz was sitting up, leaning his head against the side of the tub. Partly conscious, he was feebly exploring the injured bump where his head had struck the toilet. Noticing her, he blinked, grinned a little, and tried to stand. "Don't," Marianne said, hurrying in and bending down beside him. "I'll help you."
"They missed me," Nitz murmured. "Thanks, Mary. I'm okay. I got sick and passed out."
Holding on to him, she got him from the bathroom into the chaotic living room. There, she dropped down on the couch, pulled him down beside her, and dragged his damaged head into her lap. For a while, he passed into semi-consciousness. She sat clinging to his limp shoulders, rocking back and forth, gazing vacantly ahead of her. Finally, he stirred and pulled himself up.
"Thanks," he repeated weakly. "You're good."
She said nothing.
"They missed me," Nitz declared with pride. "I got the door shut and I didn't make any sound. They didn't know I was there."
Hugging him futilely, Marianne pressed her face against his forehead.
"Nobody else but us," Nitz murmured defiantly. "They took them all. All gone. Only the two of us left now."
Outside in the darkness, a bird made a few dismal noises. In an hour or so, it would be dawn.